Now, the former head of Starbucks says he's considering an independent campaign for president in 2020, and he's getting reactions from Democrats, President Trump, and the media.
In an interview last week on 60 Minutes, Howard Schultz acknowledged he's a lifelong Democrat, but is not attached to any one party.
I am seriously thinking of running for president. I will run as a centrist independent outside of the two-party system. We're living at a most fragile time. Not only the fact that this president is not qualified to be the president, but the fact that both parties are consistently not doing what's necessary on behalf of the American people and are engaged every single day in revenge politics.
Democrats are worried that Schultz will siphon votes away from whoever the Democratic nominee is and hand President Trump a second term. To that point, Schultz says he's ready to embrace good ideas no matter where they come from.
Samara Klar is an associate professor of political science at the University of Arizona and the co-author of Independent Politics, How American Disdain for Parties Leads to Political Inaction. Samara, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
Well, what's your overall reaction to this story? Wealthy person, former Starbucks head, founder of the company, says, hey, maybe he's going to run for president.
Well, you know, my impression is that he has a pretty inaccurate view of what independent voters really want from a candidate. And I've bought a lot of lattes at Starbucks, but I don't think he's ever bought my book, unfortunately, because I could have explained to him that it's really a diverse group of independent voters. They don't want one single candidate representing all of them.
It seems like in the media, yeah, there's this idea every now and then, like, oh, we're excited. There's this centrist campaign. There's all these voters who aren't happy with the parties. Therefore, their views are the average of the two parties. We need somebody in the middle. Talk a little more about the actual diversity of people who are political independents.
Sure. So the vast majority of independent voters really do actually prefer one of the two parties when it comes to policies and when it comes to ideology. Only about 5 to 10% of independents really are really right down the middle. They really have no partisan preference. What we tend to see with independents is that they support a party platform, but they don't really support the rhetoric, the negative rhetoric, the hostility, the gridlock in Washington. So what they're looking for is more of an ideological candidate who can actually reach across the aisle to get things done. They don't want a centrist candidate who's going to give up both conservative and liberal values.
There seems to be a lot of frustration with the political parties, but are there people out there who are really frustrated with both parties to the extent that they're just going to look for a whole new alternative?
Well, yes and no. We see a lot of Americans who are extremely frustrated with both parties, that is for sure. And we've seen that over the past several years. In the 2016 election, we saw two historically disliked candidates. We see record highs in terms of Americans who say that neither of the party really truly represents them. So, you know, Howard Schultz is correct in that there is a lot of disdain for both parties. However, not a lot of Americans are really right down the middle ideologically. Democrats and Republicans might not be as far from each other as we often think they are, but most independents really are fairly consistently liberal or conservative, and they are looking for a candidate either from within the Democratic Party or Republican Party who can represent them.
Samara Klar is with us, author of Independent Politics, How American Disdain for Parties Leads to Political Inaction. We're talking about independent candidates for president. The latest, Howard Schultz, founder of Starbucks, says, hey, I might get into this thing in 2020. Samara, how big of a challenge is it, even for someone who's wealthy and can self-fund, to not have any kind of party organization in the states to back a presidential campaign?
Well, it's a huge challenge because, first of all, Americans don't like to waste their vote. They want to feel as though they are voting for someone electable, that they're voting for somebody who has a chance of winning. And it's concerning to most voters that an independent candidate doesn't have the partisan establishment behind them. But in addition just to the question of electability, a lot of candidates do agree with the party platform. They do agree with most of the issue positions that either the Democrats or the Republicans have laid out. What they don't agree with is the hostility and the aggression in Washington.
A concern now among Democrats is that Howard Schultz, if he ends up running, would siphon more votes from Democrats, from whoever their candidate is, than he would from Donald Trump. Is that a valid worry from the Democratic perspective?
Well, you know, we're not really seeing a lot of enthusiasm for his candidacy from either sides of the aisle, so I don't know if at this point either party really needs to worry too much about Howard Schultz stealing the voters. And you know, the fact is, everybody is welcome to run and put their ideas out there. And there's no votes that belong to the Democratic Party or that belong to the Republican Party. So I don't know if this is really a legitimate criticism against the guy. If he wants to put his policies out there, he's more than welcome to. From my research, I just don't really see that there's a huge voter base there who's willing to support an independent candidate like that.
I want to talk about the media reaction here. Here's a guy, he has some billions of dollars, over $3 billion, I guess, according to Forbes. He says, yeah, I might run for president, and he's on 60 Minutes right away. Do we in the media jump at this kind of shiny new thing and maybe give it more attention up front than it deserves?
Well, listen, I don't want to criticize anyone, any of our friends in the media, but we have a lot of really qualified candidates who have announced their candidacy. They're actual politicians. They're actually running to be president. And we haven't really heard much about them in the past few days. It's sort of been all Howard Schultz all the time. I think this is kind of an exciting news event. Within a few days, I think it will probably die down. And hopefully, as the primaries start to approach, we can start to talk more about those who really are running.
Can you talk about past historical precedents for the candidates who have, you know, the Ross Perots and John Andersons and people like that who mounted some kind of independent campaign?
Sure. So we know that at a national level, independent candidates don't do all that well. Of course, at local levels and state levels, we've seen some pretty successful independent candidates, for example, Bernie Sanders. But nationally, we don't really see that independent candidates tend to win. Part of this is because of the electability issue. People don't really see them as electable in a general election. And it's also difficult to sustain a national campaign without the party establishment behind you, as we've seen in a lot of political science work. So, you know, some have done better than we would expect, but most candidates who really want to win tend to ultimately affiliate themselves with one of the two parties. So, for example, Bernie Sanders, who presents himself as an independent, nevertheless ran as a Democrat. Donald Trump, in fact, ran as a Republican, despite the fact that he had a pretty non-Republican past. He would have been seen as more of an independent candidate as well.
And we've seen some candidates attach themselves to parties, Ross Perot with the Reform Party, Ralph Nader with the Green Party, sometimes kind of uneasy alliances there. Is there some sort of synergy that actually could happen between an independent candidate and a third party that could really put them on the map?
You know, again, I think the biggest problem right now is we don't really have a huge percentage of voters who are looking to support a new party. We have a lot of voters who say they are dissatisfied with how the current party politics are being run, but most voters want their candidates to change their behavior. They want the existing party system, the existing parties to change. They don't necessarily want a new party to enter the scene.
I look at France with a very, very different way of electing leaders than we have, but we have Emmanuel Macron. He kind of came out of nowhere in some ways, I believe, sort of formed a party under him and just changed the dynamic of elections there. Is there a systemic difference that would keep something like that from happening in the United States?
You know, one thing that is really unique to the United States is the fact that Americans do tend to identify very strongly with their partisanship. Partisan identity isn't necessarily the single most important identity for most voters, but it is an identity that people hold really dear. You know, most people identify as a Democrat or as a Republican, and that is a political affiliation that really drives their vote. And most other countries actually don't have that element of social identity wrapped up with their partisanship.
We've heard from people with third-party efforts over the years who say the system is unfair to third parties, the media is unfair to third parties, everything's biased toward the two big parties. Is there something to that?
Well, listen, I mean, I'd argue the media gives plenty of attention to independent candidates, so I don't see any real systemic media bias there. I think it is fair to say that when you are part of the political establishment, you certainly enjoy resources and support that make your candidacy much more likely, and that is just a function of sort of the two-party system that we have here in the United States. So, if an independent candidate wanted to argue that they feel there is systemic bias against their candidacy, though that is probably true. We have institutional barriers that make it harder for independent candidates to succeed. But the parties really do serve a function. You know, political parties are able to aggregate the preferences of their ideological base, and that's really helpful to a lot of voters who don't necessarily have the time to comb through each party platform.
We're talking about former Starbucks chief Howard Schultz and his potential White House run as an independent candidate and what that would mean for Democrats and President Trump. Samara Klar is an associate professor of political science at the University of Arizona. She's the co-author of the book Independent Politics, How American Disdain for Parties Leads to Political Inaction.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Schultz mount in an independent campaign for president? Would that hand President Trump a second term, or not necessarily? Do you think Schultz could actually win? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. We're continuing our discussion about the 2020 presidential race and how an independent campaign by former Starbucks head Howard Schultz could shake it up. Samara Klar is an associate professor of political science at the University of Arizona and the co-author of Independent Politics, How American Disdain for Parties Leads to Political Inaction.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Schultz's potential White House run? Do you want to see more high-profile candidates, whether it's him or someone else? Do you want to see stronger runs from third parties in presidential campaigns? Or do you think if you want to run, hey, get into one of the party's primaries and see where it goes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. To your calls now. Tom is with us in Burlington. Tom, hi.
I wanted to ask about the, after we had the 2008 recession, the Republican Party was a word that was not, it was person non grata. So they changed their name to the Tea Party. And they were very successful getting back in there. And then now, all of a sudden, that seems to have petered out or something. The rebranding anyway, do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure. Tom, thanks for the call. And Samara, I guess the Tea Party was not, obviously, it wasn't its own party running people for office, but they were a, I think, fairly successful pressure group constituency within the Republican Party. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The Tea Party was sort of a subset of representatives within the Republican Party who wanted to push the agenda, in that case, a little further to the right in most cases. So that was a group of representatives working from within the party system to sort of change the agenda. And that did, you know, have a lot of success at the time. We saw a lot of people who started to follow the Tea Party, who would vote for Tea Party-endorsed candidates. And this is, you know, exactly what I was referring to. This isn't an independent party. This isn't a third party. But these are people from within the party system who are trying to make changes.
Has it petered out, as Tom says?
Well, you know, we don't hear as much about the Tea Party anymore. The Republican Party overall seems to have been influenced by the Tea Party in the long term, and so the distinction has potentially waned. But what we still continue to see are a lot of Americans who don't want to identify with either party at all. We see this growing percentage of Americans who say they are independent. And in my research, I found that that's because they do not like the tone of Washington. They don't like the constant bickering, the constant fighting. And even among those who do identify as Democrats and Republicans, they can all agree that independents seem to sort of be the most socially desirable option, the most attractive option of the three.
Thanks a lot for the call, Tom. We'll go to Stella now in Sturgeon Bay. Stella, hi.
Hi. excuse me. I just have a big question mark in my mind. All of the comments, all of the stories about the, I don't remember his name, I'm sorry, the Starbucks guy, running for president is always in conjunction with his book launch. And he could not buy this much publicity for his book. I'm wondering, is this just a publicity stunt for his book?
Thanks a lot for the call. And I remember there was a guy who used to talk about running for office, and people said, oh, it's just a publicity stunt, a book, whatever, and his name is President Donald Trump now. So he actually did go past the publicity stunt stage. Hard to tell. We can't read their minds, Samara.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think part of the reason that Howard Schultz might be getting so much attention is because he really has hit a sore spot among Americans, which is this dissatisfaction with both parties. You know, if we didn't have so much dissatisfaction with the Democrats and the Republicans, then people might not be as inclined to give Howard Schultz so much attention. But, you know, he is correct in that we have a huge percentage of voters who are not happy with either of their parties right now.
Thanks a lot for that call. So how do we fix the things about the parties, assuming we need to fix them? I won't judge that. But how would we change that? Who is at fault? Is it the leaders of the parties, the politicians, their base? Where does this come from?
Well, you know, in my work, what we found generally is that when individuals are exposed to a lot of partisan disagreement, a lot of bickering and conflict, that is when people seem to want to retreat from politics. That's when they want to disengage. Now, there is this real active party base that some candidates like to play to who enjoy the red meat of it, who enjoy the name-calling and the fighting. But that's not what most Americans want to be associated with. So what I would suggest to the parties is if they're interested in bringing their friendly independence back into the fold, they may want to engage in more civil rhetoric. That seems to be what Democratic-leaning and Republican-leaning independents want from their parties.
The problem seems to be that when politicians try to do that, they may be punished by their base if they're perceived as not holding the line, being too willing to compromise with the other side, and then maybe even a primary election run against them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real balancing act because what we see are the hardcore fan base, the real strong partisans who are willing to penalize candidates for compromising or for retreating from their promises. But it appears that we do have this growing proportion of Americans who are more tolerant of that kind of behavior. And it seems that they may actually start to reward more bipartisanship.
Talking to Samara Klar, she is at the University of Arizona, author of the book Independent Politics, How American Disdain for Parties Leads to Political Inaction, talking about independent presidential campaigns, prompted in part by Howard Schultz, founder of Starbucks, saying he's considering a run for president. Pam joins us now in Oconto. Pam, hello.
Hello.
What do you think, Pam?
My thought is, you know, I don't think it's so much a problem with the two-party system that we have that we need to be looking for an additional party. My thought is that we need to start with setting some term limits on the current members that we have in Congress. You've got somebody that becomes somebody that's been in Congress for 25, 30 years. We start to see bullying going on, almost like a clique.
Pam, thanks a lot for the call. So, Samara, term limits for Congress, she says. What do you think?
Sure. So, you know, I don't personally study term limits, but I have a lot of friends and colleagues in political science who do. And although it is intuitively a really appealing idea to a lot of Americans to force people out and get some fresh faces in, but I do have to say the research suggests that term limits are actually kind of a bad thing for candidates since politics is really hard. It takes a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. And it does appear that when term limits are introduced, we get a lot less experience, a lot less institutional memory. Now, I'm very sympathetic to the idea, which is that, you know, younger people, new ideas are great for politics, but that's why we have elections. So, you know, if a candidate is, if a politician seems to be out of step, it's really up to the voters in that district to step up to the polls and vote them out.
Thanks a lot for the call, Pam. Adam joins us now in La Crosse. Adam, hello.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Adam?
Yeah, so I lived in Minneapolis for many years, and before I moved down here, had the chance to do my first ranked choice voting election. I love the idea of ranked choice voting. It was very rewarding. I think it also would allow more candidates to come forth with great ideas where they wouldn't have to be afraid to negatively impact their favorite main party choice, and also really give a chance for candidates to get elected who don't stand a chance otherwise.
Adam, thanks for the call. And I think there was an election in Maine that got a lot of national attention because of ranked choice voting. Samara, what do you think?
Yeah, I think actually there's a lot of really creative institutional ideas that people can use to try to bring in candidates that might have less funding, that might not have the establishment behind them. And a lot of people do point to the primary system as it currently exists as a factor in what produces these extremist candidates that tend to be out of step with the average American. The primaries tend to encourage candidates to appeal to their base. They tend to dissuade candidates who are planning to be more bipartisan, to be more cooperative. So, yes, it's absolutely true. These institutional changes could have a big effect.
Thanks for the call, Adam. In our last minute or so, Samara, is there a way to re-engage people, those independents who are all across the map in some ways, to re-engage them when they're turned off by what they see as partisan bickering?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most independents are really knowledgeable about politics. They are, you know, really politically sophisticated. They have political preferences. They have views on most issues. So it's a great it's a great proportion of voters that we can really bring back into politics. What they don't like is aggression, fighting, name-calling. They are not affectively polarized. They don't hate members of the other party. What they want is more civil debate between two distinct parties.
But they're not necessarily waiting for a centrist, say, coffee shop founder to wave the banner for them.
They are not waiting with bated breath for Howard Schultz, I have to say, no.
We'll leave it there for now. Samara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Samara Klar is an associate professor of political science at the University of Arizona and the co-author of the book Independent Politics, How American Disdain for Parties Leads to Political Inaction. We talked with her about independent campaigns for president, third-party options, partisan divides, and the latest news, former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz saying, hey, he's thinking about a potential run for president as an independent himself.